Hi, I'm Will Stein and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 series Desert Island Discs, whereby in each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book and luxury item they would take with them if they are stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in this podcast. You can find links to the songs either on the Geography and Environment website or on the Geography Island Jams Spotify music account. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. Joining me today, I have Jonathan Terefe, a current MSc Environment Development student. Before coming to the LSE, Jonathan did a BA in Social Science and Environmental Science at Jacobs University in Germany. Despite also being born in Germany, Jonathan has lived in South Africa, Ghana, and Ethiopia. Whilst at LSE, Jonathan joined the team for the LSE Africa Summit as the speakers and content coordinator. In this position, he supported the team in implementing their first ever virtual conference, which had 27 speakers and close to 1,000 attendees. Finally, for Jonathan's dissertation, he's exploring the link between green infrastructure initiatives and the resettlement of low-income residents in Addis Ababa. So welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me, Will. Good to be here. And looking forward to stepping into your virtual studio.
I thought I'd kick off with the football thing. So you mentioned before that you joined, was it the LSE football team actually? I didn't confirm.
It was, yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, so what's the story behind it? You said you sang at the induction?
Yeah, everyone had to prepare some sort of story to share with the rest of the team. And I just couldn't decide on what story to tell. And I thought, you know what? Because I'm one of 2 postgraduates in this, and I kind of have the license to do something different. Mm-hmm. So I just decided to pick a song and sing it instead of tell a story. But yeah, I'm not a good singer, to be honest. So
what song did you go for?
I did Let Me Love You by Mario.
Well, I'm sure that gave them a shot. I don't know how many people would have chosen to sing instead of telling a story. And had you played much football before, or were you just looking for a society to join?
No, I've pretty much played football throughout my life. One of the very constants, I'd say. But yeah, so I just thought I'd get, that's one way of meeting more people as well, but just staying fit and active. But was the case that it got called off quite early in the year. So maybe you'll get restarted.
Yeah, no, that'd be fun when it all kicks off again. And then before kick off with the music, have you joined any other societies?
That was actually initially a plan, because there were some societies I was interested in, but I just never got to join in the end, just because I had quite a few things on my plate. But one of the societies I wanted to, and I forgot the name, but I think it was one where you basically share an album every week.
Album society.
Yeah, I guess it's album society, but I would have really liked to do that. That would have been fun. But
I think actually this year, I don't know her position, but the student who produced the music for the podcast is also one of the co-founders of Album Society, you know?
Ah, okay. So that was going to be my question. Did you actually start the podcast, or was it started by someone else and did you take over?
No, it was all started in the first lockdown. And I'm doing the presenting. We had Tilly who did the music, Saskia helped develop the artwork. And so the 3 of us gave it the kickstart it needed. And here we are, almost a year later. I think it's coming up to its anniversary in May.
Still thriving.
But yeah, maybe it'll thrive even more, depending on what songs you're going to be throwing in. So what is the, what's the first song you're going to be giving us?
I decided to go for a very pan-African set of songs. So the first song I picked was Aisha by Africando. And Africando consists of salsa musicians based in New York, alongside Senegalese vocalists, but this was a rendition of the Algerian singer Khaled's, his Aisha, and basically just reminds me of especially traveling with my dad and road trips. So quite nostalgic, actually. Yeah. So Epic Aisha by Africando for my first song.
So as well as football, as I mentioned, you also joined the Africa Summit team. Probably very different experiences. So, yeah, could you first just explain what the summit is and what, for those who don't know, what the summit is and what it hopes to achieve?
Yeah, so the Africa Summit is an annual student-led event by students at the LSE. And last year's Africa Summit got cancelled because it was at the start of the pandemic. So this year's summit had to be virtual, but usually I think, I'm not sure which theater room they use at the LSE, but usually it's hosted in person. And basically it's, I would say, the biggest platform in the year at the LSE to have any kind of dialogue and conversations on the African continent. And each team every year gets to structure and design the program to basically pick the themes they want to discuss. So this year's theme, for example, was the global crisis as a catalyst for change.
And your role as speakers and content coordinator, how was that coordinating it all virtually?
It was very tough, frustrating at times, but equally rewarding, I'd say. I think probably the biggest step throughout this virtual and lockdown period was probably also making a bunch of friends. So from my team, the speakers and content team, as well as the wider team, I did get to meet quite a few people. My role was basically, so there were four coordinators on the team. I was one of them. And then there was the co-director, which was Elise. Other coordinators were Maxine, Aaliyah, and David. And basically our roles were to design and structure the program, the content, and to also then select the speakers for the sessions we'd be organizing. So we had panels, we had two-person dialogues called In Conversation With, we had policy workshops, just different kind of sessions and a really interesting set of speakers. But I must say it was quite a lengthy experience in terms of doing the outreach to speakers and getting rejected and having to find new speakers and coordinating all of that. Yeah.
And were there any talks or conversations which most stood out to you?
Well, I'm probably a bit biased here, but I was fortunate enough also as part of the speakers and content team, because we were so involved in doing all the research about the speakers we'd be inviting. We are also sort of the most familiar compared to the other teams with the speakers. So we actually got to moderate and chair a couple of sessions. So I'm quite happy with the fact that I got to moderate the two-person dialogue for the climate change session that we hosted this year. And it was basically focusing on how to reframe the climate agenda to make it more people-centered on the continent. So I think that's probably one of my highlights. And the other was where I got to chair the panel on COVID-19 and the African road to recovery. So that was nice because I got to kind of deal with the Q&A, and it's something I'd never done before, but really exciting.
And how many people did you have listening in? Because they can get quite big, these virtual panels.
Yeah. So we had, I think, close to 15, 16 sessions maybe throughout the two-day event. And overall, probably, like you mentioned earlier, close to 1,000 attendees attended the event. But for my session specifically, I think the first one, the climate change, was probably just over 100. And then the other one was maybe 85 or close to 100 as well. But yeah.
But it's a lot of people, isn't it? You know, I definitely feel a lot more confident on Zoom than in person, because when you're on Zoom, it's just a number at the bottom of the screen. But it's that, 85, 100 different screens open and watching you handle the
Yeah, it might be the case. Zoom makes you much more comfortable. But I think part of it was also because the most important people in this scenario are the people you're talking to, or the conversations you're moderating. And because you kind of get to go backstage with them beforehand, you already get a for the type of person, you know, before she going live, you're spending time backstage with them and you're having conversations, and makes it much more relaxing because you get to talk to them and get to know a bit about them aside from the conversation or their profession that they're going to discuss. So yeah, that was a fun experience.
So I've got a few more on it, but I just thought I'd go in with your second song.
Second song is Oleku by Ice Prince featuring Brymo, and it's definitely a bit more rap hip hop, but I would say in the wider umbrella of Afrobeats. And although this is a Nigerian classic, it reminds me of the time when I was living in Ghana. And it's quite a motivational tune, I'd say. But I think it also helped set the foundation. Not that it did it on its own, but it definitely did propel African music to the global stage. I mean, the music that we're hearing coming out of the continent today, I think was definitely part of those songs that helped set the agenda, I guess you could say.
So just going back to the LSE Africa Summit, you mentioned that reaching out to people, you got rejected and it was, you know, a challenge to get some speakers. Do you have any tips for people who are trying to organize their own conferences and trying to get high profile speakers to come present?
Yeah, you know, actually, we made a rookie mistake at the beginning, which is basically that a lot of the speakers we had invited at first never got the invites because a lot of the emails had gone to spam.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So we thought that, we got all these invites out, but we didn't get a response from any of those for quite some time. We were wondering why, until one of the speakers got back to us and said that they found in the spam folder. So it was basically a whole cycle of speakers that we had kind of lost out on, because as you approach the conference date, speakers will also have less of a window to kind of accept the invitation. So it's important that you get those out early enough and just make sure that they receive them. I think that was probably the most damaging experience, but we still recovered in the end.
Is there any way around that? How do you send emails without them going to spam?
Yeah, that's something we had to work with. So preferably we sent an attachment, but because it's the attachments that oftentimes lead those emails to ending up in the spam folder, you sometimes have to also send the invite just in the body of the email. But that's basically how we maneuvered around it. But it was especially the case for private email addresses and Gmails, where that was the case. I think for email addresses under, I don't know, wider domains or organizations, I don't think that would be as much of a problem. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's that point. Yeah, I have to remember that about, you know, next time I start reaching out to people, because it is a challenge already to get people to respond, let alone getting out of the spam folder. But then jumping into the probably a bigger question, but so the summit focuses on discussing solutions to some of Africa's most pressing issues. What issues would you say are the most pressing or most relevant to the whole continent? These, of course, as you know, there's so many different countries who have got their own things going on. Are there really any issues that span across the whole continent?
That's tough, because in some way or another, I feel like all these different issues, whether that's peace and conflict, whether that's gender equality, whether that's climate change, I feel like they all tap into each other. So I think noticing that these aren't isolated issues, but that they very much feed into each other, was one realization that I had was important to consider. But yeah, that I suppose that's a way of circumventing your question. There's not a single issue that stands out. And
I know, I didn't know what to expect back from that. But, you know, you never know. You could have had a magical answer ready to go, but fine. Well, the next one you should be able to get. So what is the third song you'll be taking with you?
Right. The next song is called Somalia, and it's by Kanan. You might know Kanan from the 2010 World Cup song, Waving Flag. But basically, yeah, this song was off the album Troubadour, and it was, I think, one of my first albums that I genuinely fell in love with. Probably Troubadour and Distant Relatives by Nas and Damian Marley. But yeah, this was one of a few songs on the album that also sampled Ethiopian music. So it sampled, in this case, Tiene Mastawisha by Telahun Gesesa. And he's widely considered one of the biggest Ethiopian singers of all time. But also just because the song is layered with, it has lyricism, storytelling, but also because I think much of his album focuses on the wider context of the Somali civil war. So there's, a lot of imagery, and he makes it quite vivid in the way that he's telling his stories.
So now you're, dissertation. So in your dissertation, you're exploring the link between green infrastructure initiatives and the resettlement of low-income residents in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia. First, you know, forgive me, embarrassing myself, you know, even studying geography. What is meant by green infrastructure? What does that include?
Basically, green infrastructure could include any infrastructure projects that especially seek to mitigate carbon emissions and in that sense kind of make a climate effort at greening, in this case because it's in the city, urban areas. And yeah, so why I chose green infrastructure initiative specifically is because it's in the wider just the wider context of recent national campaigns and green projects over the last few years, whether that's planting trees en masse or whether that's building a citywide park, for instance. And oftentimes there's this perception that green is always good, but I want to kind of challenge this and see if that really is the case, because some of the implications we might not be considering. And so the second part of what you mentioned is the resettlement of low-income residents, which is what I want to look at as one of the implications of some of these green infrastructure initiatives.
So, and yes, if you expand on that more, so how would they be linked?
Oftentimes it's the case where, because it's mainly the state that's in charge of these projects, whether that's through local administration level, whether that's the city council or the federal government. But oftentimes when there's this huge project that's being introduced and it kind of requires the use of land in the city center, especially, a lot of people will be resettled as a result and moved out to the peripheries of the city. So that's kind of what I'll be looking at.
And what drew you to focusing on Addis Ababa?
Probably because what made me pick Addis is because there's a personal connection there, and it is considered one of my homes. And yeah, I think it was in my case study course, where so there's just this interesting quote that the case picks you and you don't actually pick the case. So that's what made me pick Addis.
Can you tell me about your fourth song and if there's any reasons why you'll be taking it with you?
Fourth song is Soa by Fatoumata Diawara, and this is more African folk music, but this is from her 2011 album Fatu, and two other really good songs that I was close to picking are Kanu and Kun Umu. Basically, one of my best friends from undergrad showed me the song and introduced me to Fatoumata Diawara, and I was completely blown away the first time I'd heard the song, especially the instrumentations, the guitar, and then also her amazing voice. So that's why I picked the song.
So my next question, it might be difficult based on how young you were, but I was going to ask, out of Germany, South Africa, Ghana, and Ethiopia, are you able to give me your favorite aspects or features of living in each place, whether it be the people, weather, or food, or anything else which you think makes it stand out from the other places which you lived?
Yeah, sure. Highlights for me growing up in Germany was especially the football, because I'd lived in Germany before I lived in Ghana, but I took football very serious at that point in time, and I was in a pretty, I was really young, but it did help me to develop very, very quickly, just given how good the football system is there. In Ghana, I'd say the food, the weather, the people, the culture, all amazing. Mm. Ethiopia, the food, and those long distance running is something that's important to keep in mind when thinking about Ethiopia. But just the weather also in Ethiopia is amazing because it's never too hot and it's never too cold. Throughout the year, it's always somewhat between, on average, I could be making this up, but I think somewhere between 6 degrees at night to 25 in the day. So It is really nice weather as well. And South Africa, this is not part of my songs that I'm sharing with you and officially part of my 8 songs, but the music in South Africa is amazing. And although I was quite young, whenever I hear certain songs, it still does remind me of the time. But I mean, Brenda Fassie, Hugh Masekela, Miriam Makeba, like there's some amazing artists from South Africa. So music, I'd say, is amazing too.
Mm. Well, on that note, pardon the pun, but can you tell me about your fifth song?
Fifth song is Still by Liquid Deep. And yeah, speaking of South Africa, they're South African duo, I think. And so imagine these settings. It was the end of second year of uni. We're having an end of year barbecue for the African Heritage Society, which is basically the equivalent of African Caribbean societies in the UK. The sun is shining, people around you, everyone's smiling. We have a sound system in place, food on the grill, and this song comes on and it just set the vibe for the day, and very much undefeated, I'd say.
Well, it sounds like the dream that, you know, a load of people with music and food and one of those things that I think
we can barely imagine that these days, huh?
Yeah, so. That 21st of June can't come any quicker. But
what are your plans for the 21st of June?
Oh, I've got no idea. There's just so many potential. I think it'd be just too much. I don't even know where I'd begin. Probably just walk through London and just see what's happening. I think not make any solid plans, just get a group, walk through the streets and just see what's going on.
A historic day.
Yeah, no, it will be. Hopefully all being well, but it is looking promising. Something I do each morning, which, you know, also good news again, but before checking Instagram, before I check Facebook, I check the Corona stats on Google to see new cases each day. Just it's like I feel like I'm watching the lottery every morning, just because you just don't know which way to go. But again, like the cases continue to drop. I think was it 3,500 today, 2,500? Like it's definitely on its way down for the UK. That's probably what I'll do on the 21st. I'll stop checking that page. That'll be the first thing. But where were we? London. So Yeah, even though you've had, you know, a somewhat virtual LSE experience, you've still very much been physically present in London. Have you been able to explore much? Like, if I was to ask you if you had any favorite spots around London, do you have any which come to mind?
This weekend, actually, I went to Greenwich Park for the first time. Mm. And it was a really nice day on Sunday. I took a book with me to Greenwich Park up on the hill, where you kind of got to see skyline and the backdrop and the green areas completely filled with people. That was quite tight. So I'd probably say Greenwich Park, just from the very little that I've seen of London. Mm. But I do hope that in the coming weeks I get to see more.
And you'll see it at its best. You know, London's really great when it's thriving and all the people out, and you've got all these, you just never know what you're gonna walk into. I remember once I was walking through Covent Garden and there was a pop-up stand which they scan your head and they make you a lollipop of chocolate of your head. And really niche, really bizarre. I forgot the name of the company now, but I don't know if they're still around. But yeah, it was just quite funny. You just don't know what. And that was just a stroll in London. I think it only cost £6. And then, yeah, I went home and gave my mum a chocolate head of me as a lollipop. Which, yeah, it's a bit of an awkward one. He's like, do you eat it? Do you keep it forever? It's one of those weird ones. But so London, what about LSE? Do you have a favorite spot on the LSE campus?
You know what? It was initially, I think, 11th or 12th floor center building. But I mean, that's a very competitive area to have any space to work now, because they get taken up so quickly. And when people leave for lunch, they leave their things there and kind of stay, keep those tables occupied. Mm-hmm. I'd say new academic building, 8th floor, was quite nice. The conference rooms, but also the terrace was cool. But then that got closed down, so I need to find me a new place now.
Well, all being well, I think they're gonna, well, obviously I hope, don't quote me on this, but I think they're gonna be opening them up, so hopefully, you know, all being well with corona and so on. But no, those places, 8th floor is always great, the conference rooms are brilliant, and then once it gets, the weather gets better, it's so nice to do your readings out on that. Yeah, NAB,
yeah,
Paris. Six songs, yeah, can you tell me your six song and any reasons why you might be taking it with you?
Right. Six song is Mahmoud Ahmed's Way Fakir. And how I came to pick this song, well, it reminds me of when I was watching this documentary on the rise of basically the Ethiopian music industry as we know it, and later the founders who helped compile the classic Ethiopeaks compilation albums. So the Ethiopeaks compilation albums was where different pioneering artists had their own volumes, and in some cases their other artists were grouped together. But this includes some of Ethiopian music's biggest legends, from Mulatu Astatke, who's basically the father of Ethio jazz, to other musicians like Girma Beyene, Mahmoud Ahmed, Talahun Gassas as well. And basically, I heard this song in the documentary, and for the rest of the film, I was trying to find the song. And when I finally found it, it was a moment of glory. So the song is 9 minutes long.
Long song.
And it's a very long song, but ballads like these are quite common, which tend to also sometimes be long in Ethiopian music. They're relatively common. But what I appreciate the most is that at 5:30, the song goes from like a slow and groovy track and speeds up into this really energetic, basic, I wouldn't say dance rhythm, but it does get you a bit, it gets you moving. So also Mahmoud Ahmed is one of my favorite artists of all time. So I'll give him that.
So my next question, an interview classic, do you have any pet peeves, anything which bothers you way more than anything else?
I'm going to have to think about this, because I think I'm quite tolerant to the point where it's like, I don't get frustrated at people doing their thing. So I'm not one to kind of get annoyed if someone's crunching their salad really loud. But a pet peeve of mine could be...
Because it can extend. It doesn't have to be a human interaction. Like, for example, mine is... it really bothers me when someone doesn't include the rest of the people in a conversation. So they say there's like six people standing. I just don't understand. If someone's leading the conversation, you know, it's sort of their responsibility to make sure everyone else in the circle feels like they can be involved and fills them in. You know, for me, that just, yeah, that's something which I just, you know.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
But yeah, it doesn't have to be, you know, I don't know, people who eat with their mouth open. But
if I were to piggyback off of yours, then I'd probably say people that when you're having a conversation like we are, and it's just very one-sided and one person's asking the other person questions, but and the other person is basically just answering them. Yeah. That's a big one, I'd say. It does get under my skin a little bit.
And it's hard, it's not always the person's fault, but it's just, yeah, it's like very hard, like when you've got this one-way thing going on.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
But then, yeah.
I mean, no.
But then, you know, who does pet peeves on purpose? You know, like, yeah, eating with the mouth open. They don't do it.
Yeah, I don't think there are any good pet peeves, really. No.
If you were able to have a dinner party guest, it could be anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Jeez. You know, this is one of the questions that I usually ask people when I get to know them. So this is a good one.
All right, that slipped on you.
I've thought about it, but you've just made me reconsider my answer. Because on the one hand, I'd want to really enjoy... the dinner. So maybe if I'm with a comedian, that would be a good one. Maybe someone like Dave Chappelle or Trevor Noah would be funny. But on the other hand, I do have the opportunity here to sit with a legend. So dead or alive, I'm going for Bob Marley, because my next song will basically talk about that. But to me, the greatest of all time.
And that's gonna be a good dinner party as well. Yeah, we're having fun for sure, I can imagine. But Marley, is that your seventh song? Is that gonna be the next song you'll be taking with you?
My seventh song, yeah. It's One Drop by Bob Marley, one of the most iconic lines in music, I think, where he says, "Give us the teachings of His Majesty, how we no want, no devil philosophy." So I think it's also from the Survival album, and it's massively underrated, and it was released after he returned from exile in Jamaica due to an assassination attempt. But it's also perhaps the most, I don't know if there's really a way of measuring this, but I'd say one of the most Pan-African albums of all time. And it doesn't get as much credit as some of his other albums like Exodus or Uprising. But yeah, it's part of a group of songs that are amazing. There's Africa Unite, Babylon System, So Much Trouble in the World, Zimbabwe, which he actually performed, what is now Harare, at Zimbabwe's independence declaration in 1980. So this guy's iconic, absolutely iconic. And I'm probably going on too long, but another reason is because I think a lot of the times when people think Bob Marley, they like to think about how much he talked about love, unity, and peace, which he's widely credited for. But I think maybe what deserves a bit more attention is also just how much he sings about resistance and like standing up for your rights. And yeah, so his resistance work is unbelievable. And that's why, to me, he is the greatest of all time.
And then the final question is, Yeah, despite the virtual experience, but do you think you're able to give me what your favorite thing about being part of the LSE is?
Oh, God.
another hard one, you know, just throw...
This is difficult. Probably the ability to get involved in anything. or to kind of, you know, to have that, I mean, very much the privilege, but the, and also the opportunity to just be able to get a hold of various academics or to get involved in a specific, I don't know, event or the lecture series, or and just to having all of that near you is quite, yeah, it's quite the luxury, to be honest. So for me, for instance, my highlight in answering part of that question was the Africa Summit, just to be able to get involved there. And although it really boils down to the 2 days, the whole experience is quite rewarding. So just having something that will stick with you for a really long time, and that can manifest itself in different ways. But yeah.
Very nice. And then finally, but by no means the least, what is the eighth song you'll be taking with you?
Eighth song has to be an absolute summer tune. And I've picked this song because it's the best of both worlds from the grime and dancehall sides. For me, I picked Can't Hold Me Down by Kano featuring Popcorn. And basically, many of my friends would probably block me if I sent them one more Spotify link to a Kano song, because Kano to me is the greatest UK MC there is, but also his most recent album, Hoodies All Summer, phenomenal. How he manages to kind of bring together garage, grime, hip hop, dancehall in his music's amazing. But this song, Can't Hold Me Down, especially, is I would have really liked to hear this I would have really liked to hear the song with a bunch of people around, and maybe even outside during a barbecue, and enjoying myself, because the way the song starts with the keys and it just takes off from there, iconic.
Well, I know the songs you'll be listening to on the 21st of June now.
And add this onto your playlist as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. Where are we now? So you've done your eight songs. You're given the Bible, the beverage report, and you're also allowed to take a book of your choice. So what is the book you'll be taking with you?
I thought about it. I'm stranded on an island. I'm not going to read something I've already read. I'm probably going to read something that will be useful but equally interesting. Mm-hmm. So I picked 100 Things to See in the Night Sky, expanded edition by Dean Regas. I have not read this yet. I don't know what's inside this book, but I figured if I'm on an island, there's no light pollution, unlike in London where you can't even see a single, especially central London, where you can't even see a single star at night. So yeah, that's why I picked this book.
Brilliant. And your luxury item?
It's not a luxury item, but a perfectly round football. Maybe if it's imperfectly round, even better. But yeah, I pick a football just because you can always learn some new tricks and have a makeshift pillow as well.
Brilliant. And what is your favorite meal?
Yeah, I kind of cheated on this one. So I said bayainatu injera, which is basically... I don't want to quite characterize it as a flatbread, but that's kind of what it is. It's made of teff, which is a sort of grain. And bayainatu is usually at Ethiopian restaurants, it would be, because it would be served on a platter and you'd have different stews and dishes on them. So you'd have like a lentil stew, a chickpea stew, some meat, salad, spinach, different dishes. But so I'm treating it basically as one meal, but really it's a platter to share. So maybe Will, you and I can go for Ethiopian sometime soon.
Yeah, I suppose if you're willing to share, I think we'll let it slide. To be honest, I've been quite lenient with all these rules. People have brought items which definitely aren't allowed in the BBC version, but if that's sharing, we can let it go. And then finally, your favorite quote.
My favorite quote is, "You've tasted the dust in the alleyways, so you know how to get around." And I heard this quote from a TED talk given by the late Komla Dumour. He's a BBC journalist, but he he was just talking about how people in the audience of that TED Talk had institutional knowledge and they're able to kind of get around challenging situations, and they'll be able to, when they're pushed outside of their comfort zone is kind of when they excel. So basically, when you've tasted the dust in the alleyways, you know how to get around. He's implying that, you've already survived some pretty tough bits, so I'm pretty sure you'll be fine. And that's why I picked the quote, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Jonathan, for sharing your book, Luxury, Favorite Meal, Favorite Quote, and Geography and Jams.
I don't know if I quite followed the rules, but thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.